A third all-consuming mystery made the old questions irrelevant. Was Mona Lisa lost forever? By the end of 1911, her trail was as cold as the North Sea. The world intruded, dramatic new headlines pushing the caper off the front pages. The unsinkable Titanic lost on her maiden voyage. Scott loses race to pole and dies in the attempt. The Mona Lisa heist seemed to have been the perfect crime. Until, in 1913, a letter was sent from Leonardo.
Nicholas Grace was reading from The Lost Mona Lisa by R.E. Scotti, which was produced by Duncan Mitchell. Tomorrow, the trail takes us to Florence at the same time, 2:45.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock. Hello, this is Luke Tuddenham. I can offer you pignapping, private detection, impostering, fisticuffs and broken engagements this hour as Matt Lucas and Charles Dance star in Summer Lightning by P.G. Wodehouse. Later, we've a tale penned by the crime writer extraordinaire Ruth Rendell, 30 years on from the day he left his grandmother in her cold stone mansion, a middle-aged man returns to claim his inheritance in paperwork at 8:30. Now the first of a two-part drama. In 1929, P.G. Wodehouse published the second in a series of much-loved novels that was to become known as the Blanding Saga.
Summer Lightning by P.G. Wodehouse, starring Patricia Hodge, Charles Dance, Tim Pigott-Smith, Samuel West, Rachel Sterling, Jared Harris, Martin Jarvis and Matt Lucas, with Matthew Wolfe as Ronnie Fish and Lisa Dillon as Sue Brown. Ian Ogilvy is the voice of P.G. Wodehouse.
Blanding's castle slept in the sunshine. Ripples of heat mist played across its smooth lawns. The air was full of the lulling drone of insects. It was that gracious hour of a summer afternoon, midway between luncheon and tea, when nature seems to unbutton its waistcoat and put its feet up. In the shade of a laurel bush outside the back of this stately home of England, Beach, butler to Clarence, 9th Earl of Emsworth, its proprietor, sat reading a weekly paper devoted to the doings of society and the stage. The laurel bush, which had hitherto not spoken, said,
"Psst! I say Beach!
Psst!
I?
Psst!
Oh, Mr. Carmody, sir.
Did I startle you, Beach?
Extremely, sir.
I'm sorry. Beach, do you want to earn a quid?
Yes, sir.
Can you get hold of Miss Millicent? Alone?
Certainly, sir.
Then give her this note and don't let anyone see you do it, especially Lady Constance.
I will attend to the matter immediately, sir. Perhaps you are not aware, sir, that her ladyship went up to London on the 3:30 train.
You mean all this creeping from bush to bush has been a waste of time? Well, I'll come out of it, then.
I wish I'd known that before. I've severely injured a good suit.
No, well, allow me, sir.
Thanks. You know, Beach, life's rummy. Here I am at Blanding's Castle, loving it. And yet when the project of my coming here as Lord Emsworth's private secretary was first mooted, I don't mind telling you that the heart was rather bowed down with woe.
No doubt you were reluctant to leave London, sir.
Exactly. But now that old Ronnie's coming down here, joy, as you might say, will be unconfined.
Is Mr. Ronald expected, sir?
Tomorrow or the day after. I say, what was that thing I saw you cutting out of the paper just now?
Oh, a photograph of Mr. Galahad, sir. Would you care to see the clipping? There is a reference to Mr. Galahad's literary work.
Oh, let's see. A pretty perky snap of old Galley. The Hon. Galahad Threepwood, brother of the Earl of Emsworth. A little bird tells us that Galley is at Blanding's Castle, Shropshire, the ancestral seat of the family, busily engaged in writing his reminiscences. They ought to be as warm as the weather, if not warmer. Thanks. Has it ever occurred to you, Beach, that this book of his is going to make no small stir when it comes out?
Frequently, sir. Mr. Galahad was somewhat wild as a young man.
Well, I'm saving up for my copy. Thank you, Beach. I must be getting about my duties. You won't forget that note, will you?
tea. Quite capital.
Hello.
Tea, Millicent?
Hello, Uncle Clarence. Yes, please. You've been down seeing the Empress.
Eh? Oh, yeah. sit down, my dear. You, Paul. I've been with her all the afternoon.
What do you do to her? Read her bedtime stories?
I do. She's in wonderful shape. I've every hope she'll win the silver medal in the fat pigs class at the Shropshire Agricultural Show. Second year in succession.
I'm so glad. Mr. Carmody told me he had never seen a finer animal in his life.
Carmody? I like that young man. He's sound on pigs.
He's an improvement on Rupert Baxter, isn't he?
Baxter. Dreadful fellow. Thank goodness I've seen the last of Baxter.
I don't think Aunt Constance has given up the idea of getting him back.
Well, good God, what do you mean?
I know she doesn't like Mr. Carmody.
Perfect nonsense. He's a most capable, intelligent boy. I wish to heaven she'd mind
it. Clarence!
Oh, Lord.
Why, Aunt Constance? I thought you'd gone up to London.
Oh, I miss my train. However, I can do all I have to do in London tomorrow. Give me some tea, dear. I shall go out by the 11:15. In a way, it will be more convenient. Ronald will be able to drive me back.
What made you miss your train?
Yes, you started in good time, Connie.
I met Sir Gregory Parslow. He kept me talking. He is extremely worried. He used to know Galahad very well, and he's very much alarmed about this book of his.
I bet he isn't the only one.
Galahad should have been restrained by Act of Parliament from writing his reminiscences. Sir Gregory wanted me to try to find out if Galahad was putting anything about him into it.
Better ask him. He's coming across the lawn now.
Ooh.
Doesn't he look marvellous? It really is extraordinary that anyone who's had as good a time as he has can be so amazingly healthy.
All our family have had excellent constitutions.
I'll bet Uncle Galley needed every ounce of his.
What ho! What ho! Refreshments!
Tea, Uncle Galley.
Stop there. I never drink tea. Too much respect for my insides. I'll have some cake, though. Did I ever tell you about poor Buffy's struggles and the temperance lectures? No, you'll find the story in my book.
How's it coming along?
Magnificently, my dear. Stuff just pours out. Now, Clarence, I wanted to ask you.
Yeah?
What year was it there was that terrible row between young Gregory Parslow and Lord Burper when Parslow stole the old chap's false teeth and pawned them at a shop in the Edgware Road? What's the matter, Connie? Fox gnawing at your vitals?
Galahad, you are not proposing to print libelous stories like that about our nearest neighbour.
Certainly am. Let Parslow bring in action if he wants to. I'll fight him to the House of Lords. It's the best documented story in my book. Well, back to work. Excellent cake. Good afternoon.
Clarence, what are you going to do about this?
Do?
Can't you see that if this awful book of Galahad's is published, it will alienate half our friends? Imagine Sir Gregory's feelings when he reads that appalling story.
Well, I'm not worrying about Parslow's feelings. Besides, he did steal Burper's false teeth. I remember him showing them to me. Packed up in cotton wool, in a small cigar box.
No!
What's he doing with his hands?
I'm wringing them, Clarence. What do you think? Oh, if only Mr. Baxter were still with us. Yeah. He would find a way out of this dreadful business. Mr. Baxter was the most wonderfully capable man I ever met.
Capable of anything? Threw flower pots at me in the middle of the night. I woke up, found flower pots streaming in at my bedroom window. I looked out, there was this fellow Baxter standing on the terrace, hurling the dash thing as if he was a machine gun or something. I had to let him go. I suppose it's in an asylum by this time.
You know perfectly well there was a quite simple explanation. My diamond necklace had been stolen and Mr. Baxter thought the thief had hidden it in one of the flower pots. He went to look for it and got locked out and tried to attract attention.
I prefer to think the man was crazy. And that's the line that Galahad takes in his book.
Galahad is not putting that story into his book.
Of course he is. I think he's going to waste excellent material like that. Well, I'm going to have another look at the Empress. Millicent, cheer up.
Bye, Uncle Clarence. Aunt Constance, why are you so anxious to get Mr. Baxter back?
I think his presence here is essential.
What's wrong with Mr. Carmody?
Mr. Carmody is a grossly inefficient secretary, and he spends far too much of his time mooning around you, my dear. It would be nice having Ronald down. You must try to see something of him, if Mr. Carmody can spare you.
Do you think I'm in love with Mr. Carmody, Aunt Constance?
Such a thought never entered my head.
That's fine, then.
He has no money and very little prospects. And, of course, your uncle holds your own money in trust for you and would never dream of releasing it if you wish to make an unsuitable marriage.
Lucky I'm not in love with him, then, isn't it?
Why, you won't marry Ronald. I can't think. You've been fond of one another since you were children.
Oh, I like old Ronnie a lot.
It has been a great disappointment to your Aunt Julia.
She'll get him off all right if she sticks at it.
Well, I've had a letter from your Aunt Julia saying that during their stay at Biarritz, they met a charming American girl, a Miss Schoonmacker. She appeared to be quite taken with Ronald, and he with her. He travelled back to Paris and left her there.
How fickle men are.
No, she has some shopping to do. By this time, she's probably in London. Julia invited her to stay at Blandings. She may be here any day now.
You mean, if I don't watch my step, this Miss Dupenhacker may steal my Ronnie away from me?
Well, exactly.
Good luck to her. I'll be a bridesmaid if wanted. Ronnie and I are great pals, but he's not my style. Too short, for one thing.
Short?
I'm inches taller than he is. When we went up the aisle, I should look like someone taking her little brother for a walk.
At any rate, I'm relieved to hear that there is no nonsense going on between you and Mr. Carmody. I happen to know that he's entangled with some impossible chorus girl.
What?
A girl of the name of Brown. She's been seen repeatedly dining and dancing with Mr. Carmody.
Excuse me, Aunt Constance. I'm going to take a short stroll in the rose garden.
Ah! Ah! Get away! Get off! Ow! Ah, Millicent, my dearest girl, you got my...
Hello, Hugo.
What's the matter?
Nothing.
I've just been stung by a beastly great wasp.
Good.
I say, what's up?
You want to know what's up?
Yes, what's up?
I'll tell you what's up.
Well, what's up? Look here, Millicent, I'm pretty fed up with all the secrecy and general snakiness. What's wrong with going to your Uncle Clarence and telling him in a frank and manly way that we love each other and are going to get married?
Why should we lie to Uncle Clarence?
I don't get your drift.
I will continue snowing. I'm not quite sure if I'm ever going to speak to you again. I have it on the most excellent authority that you are entangled with a chorus girl. Name of Brown. Explain.
It's a lie. I haven't set eyes on Sue Brown since I first met you.
No, you've been down here all the time.
And when I was setting eyes on her, why, dash it, my attitude was brotherly. Nothing more. I liked dancing, and she liked dancing, so occasionally we would tread the measure. Sue Brown's a really good sort.
Pretty, I suppose.
Yeah, no, not pretty, no, but a sound egg. Sisterly.
Sisterly. Well, I suppose I'll have to believe you. But just bear this in mind, my lad. One more attack of that brotherly urge.
Right. Of course. Righto, Millicent.
Dear, dear Mr. Baxter, this is an SOS. I have a proposal to put to you.
Miss Brown won't be long now, sir. Matin is just finishing.
Oh, right.
I was sorry to hear about the hot spot, Mr. Fish. That nightclub of yours, busting up that way.
Yeah.
When I heard that you and Mr. Carmody were starting one of those places, I said to the fireman, I'll give it 2 months, I said. Mm. It was 6 weeks, wasn't it, sir? Won me half a crown, that did.
Ah.
Used to see a lot of Mr. Carmody round here at the Regal at one time, asking for Miss Brown. Great friends those two was.
What?
By the way, sir, the flowers arrived all right.
Eh?
The bouquet you sent Miss Brown, sir. Right here. I haven't given her them yet. Thought she'd rather have them after the performance.
Give me those flowers, Mac.
What? Right, sir. Here you are, sir. Now you look just like a bridegroom, sir.
When Miss Brown comes out, tell her I'll be waiting outside in my car.
Rightio, sir.
Ronnie, you precious angel.
Sue.
I'm so sorry I kept you waiting. I had to see Mr. Mason. The show's coming off on Saturday. It's all the fault of people like you going abroad for the summer instead of staying in London and coming to the theatre. Oh, what lovely flowers. For me.
Apparently. Leap in. Listen, Sue, read those blooms.
They're beautiful.
Yes, but they aren't from me. Look at the note. They're from a blighter named P. Frobisher Pilbeam. Who is he?
Ronnie. I've never even met him. He keeps sending me his beastly flowers and writing me his beastly letters, and I've never set eyes on him in my life.
You don't know who he is?
One of the girls told me that he used to edit that paper, Society Spice. I don't know what he does now.
You know, sometimes I ask myself if you really care a hang for me. I'm a failure. Can't even run a nightclub. No brains, no looks.
You've got a lovely complexion.
Too pink. And I'm so damn short. Why the dickens couldn't I have been born a decent height, like Hugo? Sue, the fellow at the stage door was saying that you and Hugo used to be as thick as thieves.
Ronnie, that was before I met you. I used to like dancing with him, that's all.
Look, will you swear there's nothing between Hugo and you?
Of course there isn't.
Nothing between this fellow Pillbeam and you?
Of course not.
Right. Then I can go ahead as planned. Do you know why I'm going down to Blandings tonight?
No, I only wish you weren't.
Well, I'll tell you. I've got to get round my Uncle Clarence. He's my trustee, and I've simply got to have another chunk of my capital. Without money, how on earth can I marry you? Let me just get hold of funds and we'll dash off to the registrar's the moment you say the word.
Oh, Ronnie, you're a darling. Tell me about Blandings. Any girls there?
My cousin Millicent. The family want us to get married. But it's all right. We're both against the scheme.
Well, that's some comfort. What other girls?
Only one that I know of. Coming soon. A female called Schoonmacker. Mother and I met her at Biarritz last month. American. Pots of money, I believe. One of those beastly tall girls. I didn't like the way my mother tried to shove her off onto me.
Well, I suppose you ought really to marry some nice girl in your own set. I'm only a chorus girl, after all. And my mother was a music hall singer. You know? Pink tights and rather risky songs.
She was on the halls? What, here in London?
Yes. Did I never tell you? Her stage name was Dolly Henderson. She was the rage of London 25 years ago.
I always thought you were sort of American or something. I distinctly recollect Hugo, when he introduced us, telling me that you had just come over from New York.
So I had. Father took me to America soon after Mother died.
Oh, your mother is no longer with us?
No.
Too bad.
My father's name was Cotterley. He was in the Irish Guards.
Terrific. We must get him over at once and spring him on my blasted family.
He's dead.
Sorry. Well, at least let me tell the family about him.
If you like. But they'll still object to me because I'm in the chorus.
Dash all this rot about chorus girls. My Uncle Galley was in love with some girl on the stage back in the Dark Ages, and the family bust the thing up and shipped him off to South Africa or somewhere to forget her. Now look at him. I've a jolly good mind to go to Uncle Clarence tonight and simply tell him that I'm in love with you and intend to marry you.
What sort of man is he?
Uncle Clarence? A mild, dreamy old boy. At the moment, he's wrapped up in his pig.
That sounds cosy.
I'd feel a lot easier in my mind going down there to tackle him if I were a pig. I'd expect a much warmer welcome.
You were rather a pig just now, weren't you?
I'm frightfully sorry. It's just that I get jealous of everybody you meet. So, swear that while I'm at Blandings, you won't go out with a soul.
Not even to dance?
No.
All right.
Especially this man Pillbeam.
I thought you were going to say Hugo.
I'm not worrying about Hugo. He's safe at Blandings, secretarying for my Uncle Clarence.
So you'll have him and Millicent and Miss Schoonmacker to keep you company. How nice for you.
Sue, I say, let's go home to Norfolk Street. There's nobody there. And our butler is a staunch bird. He'll get us tea and say nothing.
You're sure there's nobody in the house? None of the dear old family?
Not a soul.
Here we are. Oh, my sainted aunt. That is to say, look who's coming down the steps.
Good afternoon, Ronald. I was looking for you.
Hello, Aunt Constance.
Will you introduce me?
This is Miss Schoonmacker.
Miss Schoonmacker, good afternoon.
Miss Schoonmacker, my aunt, Lady Constance Keeble.
How do you do, Lady Constance? I feel I know you already. Lady Julia told me so much about you at Biarritz.
When can you come down to Blandings?
Oh, very soon, I hope.
I'm going there this evening. I only ran up for the day. I want you to drive me back, Ronald.
Oh, right-ho.
Do try to come, Miss Schoonmacker. My brother will be so glad to see you. I was just on my way round to Claridge's for a cup of tea. Won't you come too?
I'd love to. I mean, I sure would. But Ronnie was taking me shopping.
Well, I shall hope to see you soon. Ronald, will you pick me up at Claridge's in an hour?
Right-ho, Aunt Constance. Well, I say.
Ronnie, what presence of mind. Why didn't you ever tell me you were one of those swift thinkers?
I didn't know it myself.
Except what happens when the real Miss Schoonmacker arrives at Blandings with her jewels and her 24 trunks.
Oh, golly!
There's only one thing to do. Send her a wire saying she mustn't come to Blandings because scarlet fever or something has broken out.
I couldn't.
You must. Sign it in Lady Constance's name. There's a post office. Go in and send it before you weaken.
It was the third morning of Ronnie's sojourn at Blandings Castle. Taking with him a tennis ball, which he proposed to bounce before him in order to assist thought, he wandered out into the grounds. Roaming through the sun-flooded park, he bounced his tennis ball and groaned in spirit. Plunged in thought and trying without success to conjure up a picture of a benevolent uncle patting him on the head with one hand while writing checks with the other, he had wandered some distance from the house when he observed, in a little dell, a large yellow caravan. Meanwhile, in Lady Constance's boudoir...
As economy, my dear, most extraordinary thing happened just now. Remember Baxter?
What are you talking about? Of course I remember Mr. Baxter.
Well, his ghost had just walked across the gravel. I was looking out of the library window and I suddenly saw...
Mr. Baxter.
Hmm?
Good morning, Lady Constance.
Oh, good morning, Lord Emsworth.
Hey, what?
I happen to be taking a caravan holiday in this neighbourhood, Lady Constance.
Ah!
And finding myself near Market Blandings last night, I thought I would...
Why, of course. We should never have forgiven you if you'd not come to see us, should we, Clarence?
Should we what?
Oh, did you say you were travelling in a caravan, Mr. Baxter? Of course you must come and stay with us. I will send somebody over to fetch your things.
Exceedingly kind of you.
It will be delightful having Mr. Baxter back at the castle again, won't it, Clarence?
I'm going down to see my pig.
Oh, Mr. Baxter, how clever of you to come in a caravan. It prevented your arrival seeming prearranged.
No, I thought of that.
You think of everything so efficient.
Lady Constance, are you in any trouble? Your letter seems so very urgent.
I am in dreadful trouble, Mr. Baxter. You know my brother Galahad.
I have never met him. Is he here now?
Yes, finishing his reminiscences.
I saw in some paper that he was writing the history of his life.
Yes, and if the book is published, we shall not have a friend left. Galahad seems to have known everybody in England when they were young and to remember everything particularly foolish and disgraceful that they did. So
you want me to get hold of the manuscript and destroy it?
Yes, yes, Mr. Baxter. You are my only hope.
I shall be delighted, Lady Constance. And to obtain possession of this manuscript should be an easy task. But is there only one copy of it in existence?
Oh, yes. Galahad told me that he was waiting till it was finished before sending it to the typist.
Then you need have no further anxiety.
Oh, Mr. Baxter.
Ronnie Fish's wandering feet eventually took him westward. It was not long, accordingly, before there came to his nostrils a familiar and penetrating odour.
Oh, I say.
And he found that he was within a short distance of the detached residence employed by Empress of Blandings as a combined bedroom and restaurant.
Hello there. Ah, hoisting in a spot of lunch.
Ronnie leaned over the rail, absorbed, and with an absent-minded flick of the wrist, bounced the tennis ball on the silver medalist's back. The Empress made excellent bouncing. Presently, Ronnie was thrilled to discover that a plan of action was beginning to emerge from the murk of his mind.
I say, Uncle Clarence?
Huh? What do you want, Ronald?
You know that capital of mine, the money you're trustee of? Well, I want you, if you will, to disgorge a segment of it for a sort of venture I've got in mind.
You wish to start another nightclub?
No, nothing like that. As a matter of fact, Uncle Clarence, I'm all for the country. What England wants is more blokes going back to the land. That's the way it looks to me.
Eh? What did you say?
To the land. More blokes going back to the land. So I want a dollop of capital to start a farm. I want to breed pigs.
Pigs? You wish to breed pigs?
That's right. Pigs!
And I suppose that when you've got them, you'll spend the whole day bouncing tennis balls on their backs. I saw you. I saw you bouncing your infernal tennis balls on my pig's back. Are you aware that Empress of Blandings is an excessively nervous, highly strung animal, only too ready on the slightest provocation to refuse her meals? You might have undone the work of months with your idiotic tennis ball.
Uncle, I never thought that...
You aren't fit to manage a pig farm. If I had to select somebody out of the whole world to manage a pig farm, I would choose you last.
Here, I say, Clarence, what's all this babble? It's interfering with literary composition.
Galahad, he bounced tennis balls on my pig.
Do you mean to tell me all this fuss was simply about that blasted pig of yours?
The Empress is not a blasted pig. She is the most remarkable animal in Great Britain. Oh. If only people will refrain from incessantly pelting her with tennis balls, the Empress is certain to do what no pig in the whole annals of the Shropshire Agricultural Show has ever done, win the silver medal 2 years in succession.
Don't you be too cocksure, my boy. I looked in at the Emsworth Arms the other day, and there was a fellow there offering 3-1 on an animal called Pride of Matchingham. Tall, red-haired fellow with a squint.
What? Pride of Matchingham belongs to Sir Gregory Parslow. I've no doubt the man offering such ridiculous odds was his pig man, well-beloved. The fellow used to be in my employment. Parslow lured him away by the promise of higher wages. The most abominable and unneighbourly thing to do.
Well, you look after that pig of yours, Clarence. Parslow's up to his old games. He intends to nobble the Empress somehow, or if he can't do that, steal her.
Oh, you don't mean that?
No, I do mean it. The man's as slippery as a greased eel. I've known young Parslow for 30 years. Some of us used to meet at the Black Footman in Gossiter Street in the old days and match our dogs against rats in the room behind the bar. Well, I put my touser up against young Parslow's banjo on one occasion for £100 a side. Now, when the night came and he was shown the rats, I'm dashed if Touser didn't just give a long yawn, roll over and go to sleep. My firm belief has always been that just before the contest, young Parslow gave him about £6 of steak and onions. Couldn't prove anything, of course, but I sniffed the dog's breath, and it was like opening the kitchen door of a Soho chop house on a summer night. That's the sort of man Parslow is. You'll find the story in my book.
God bless my soul. Well, I never realised. I must see my pig man at once. Out of my way, Ronald.
Uncle Galley?
Mm-hmm.
How could Sir Gregory steal the Empress?
Well, go to a sty at night, of course, and take her away.
But an animal that size, rather like looking in at the zoo and pocketing one of the elephants, what?
Don't talk like an idiot. She's got a ring through her nose, hasn't she?
You mean Sir Gregory could catch hold of the ring and she would breeze along quite calmly?
Certainly. Puffy Benger and I stole old Wivernoe's pig the night of the bachelor's ball at Hammer Easton. We put it in Plug Basham's bedroom. There's no difficulty about the thing whatsoever. Little child could have led it. Well, good morning.
Yes, indeed. Good morning, Uncle Galley. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah! What? Stop that damned noise. How am I supposed to write with a noise like that going on?
Sorry, Uncle. I was just thinking of something.
Well, think of something else. By the way, how do you spell intoxicated?
One X.
Thanks.
Hello, Peach. Just thought I'd look in on you for a chat.
Very good, sir.
No, sit down.
Oh.
When I was a kid, I used to be in and out of this pantry of yours all day long. I could always bring my worries to you, couldn't I, Peach?
Yes, sir.
Remember the time I hid in here when my Uncle Galley was after me with a Wang Yi for putting tin tacks on his chair?
Yes, sir.
It was a close call, but you saved me. You were staunch and true, a man in a million.
Extremely good of you to say so, sir.
Later, as the years went by, I did my best to repay you. Remember the time I gave you Blackbird for the Manchester November Handicap?
Yes, sir. It proved a remarkably sound investment.
Well, you certainly always did the square thing by me.
I trust I shall always continue to do so, sir.
I know you will, Beach. And that is why I feel so sure that when I have stolen my uncle's pig, you will be there helping to feed it till I give it back.
Eh?
You see, Beach, strictly between ourselves, I have made up my mind to sneak the Empress away and keep her hidden in that gamekeeper's cottage in the West Wood. And then, when Uncle Clarence is sending out SOSs and offering large rewards, I shall find it there and return it, thus winning his undying gratitude and putting him in the right frame of mind to yield up a bit of my money. You get the idea? You're quite right. The scheme of a lifetime. But pigs like the Empress, Beach, require large quantities of food at frequent intervals. I can't possibly handle the entire commissariat department myself. That's where you're going to help me, like the splendid fellow you've always been. An enormous quantity of food they need. Here it is in this book. At least 6 pounds of meal a day. Not to mention milk, or buttermilk and bran, made sloppy with swill.
But Mr. Ronald...
Don't tell me you're thinking of turning me down, Beach. There's money in the thing. 10 quid down, Beach, the moment you give the nod.
But, sir, I mean, if ever it was found out... Really, I don't think you ought to ask me, Mr. Ronald.
Beach...
It may interest you to know that I've heard of something really hot for the Goodwood Cup.
The Goodwood Cup, sir? Not Jujube?
No, not Jujube.
Ginger George?
No, it's no use trying to guess. Only two touts and the stable cat know this one. But you shall know it, Beach, the minute I give that pig back and claim my reward. And that pig needs to be fed. Well, Beach, how about it?
Good morning, Ronnie. You're not up yet. Heard what's happened?
What?
You know that pig of your uncle's? It's gone.
Gone?
Gone. It seems the old boy went down to the pig bin for a before-breakfast look at the animal, and it wasn't there.
How do you mean, wasn't there?
Well, it wasn't. Its room was empty and its bed had not been slept in.
Well, I'm dashed.
You don't seem very surprised.
Yes, I do. I seem frightfully surprised. I am surprised. Why shouldn't I be surprised?
Well, spring about a bit more, then. I'll tell you one thing. I've got 36 hours leave out of this startling occurrence. The old boy is sending me out to London to get a detective.
A detective?
A detective. From a place called the Argus Inquiry Agency. Naturally, I shall have to stay the night in town. That won't hurt. I've got fidgety feet and a spot of dancing will do me all the good in the world. I mean,
whose idea was this blighted detective?
Mine. All mine. Well, cheerio.
Oh, Lord. Dancing.
We shall send best man investigate big robbery. Unsigned. Big robbery. Oh, jewels, probably. With a big fee attached to their recovery, perhaps. But where? You can't scour England asking people if they've had a big robbery in their neighbourhood. Come in.
The Argus Inquiry Agency.
Good morning. P. Frobisher Pilby, manager at your service. Can I help you?
Yes, I think you can. Fine day. My name's Hugo Carmody. Right, sleuth, to business. I suppose you want to know what I've come about.
When you're ready to get round to it.
Well, I am, at the moment, private secretary to Lord Emsworth at Blandings Castle in Shropshire.
Blandings Castle? Do you know anything about this telegram? Seems to have been handed in at a place called Market Blandings.
The old boy must have sent that after I left. The absence of signature is no doubt due to mental stress. Lord Emsworth is greatly perturbed.
About this robbery?
Exactly.
I see. This big robbery. Tell me about it.
Big?
The telegram says big.
Oh, the word should be pig. Lord Emsworth's pig has been stolen.
Pig?
You know what a pig is, surely? If not, then I'm afraid there's a good deal of tedious spade work ahead of us.
A pig? Does Lord Emsworth seriously suppose I have time to waste looking for stolen pigs? Good day to you.
Oh. Well, so be it. But I wonder if I could take advantage of the beautiful friendship which has sprung up between us to use your telephone. Thank you. I say, you seem a knowledgeable sort of bloke, Pilby. What's the best that London currently has to offer to a young man with his blood up and the vine leaves more or less in his hair?
Mario's. It's the only place. As a matter of fact, I recently bought shares in it.
Really? What's the band like?
It's Leopold's.
Good enough for me. Boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom. Hello?
Sue Brown. Hello, hello, hello. This is Hugo Carmody.
Hugo?
Yes, me, Sue. Speaking from the Argus Inquiry Agency, courtesy of proprietor. I was wondering if you'd care to come out tonight and help me restore my lost youth. Sue? Hello, hello, hello?
Don't yodel like that. You've nearly made me deaf.
Sorry, dear heart. I thought the machine had conked. Well, how about it?
Well, I don't know. Though I suppose you could give me all the latest news about Ronnie.
Of course, old girl.
All right, then. Where?
Mario's. I'm told it's the posh spot these days. At 8:30.
You won't breathe a word to Ronnie about our coming here, will you, Hugo?
I told you not a syllable. Was that your foot?
Yes.
Sorry, I haven't got the hang of these new steps yet.
All right. I can trust you.
Implicitly. Telegraphic address, Discretion Market Blandings.
Ronnie's funny, you see.
One long scream.
It wouldn't do for it to get about.
Are you suggesting that Hugo Carmody is a babbler?
You do like gossiping.
It may interest you to know that I too am secretly engaged and have never so much as mentioned it to a soul.
Who
Who's the unfortunate girl?
The lucky girl, you mean, is Miss Millicent Threepwood.
I never heard anything so wonderful in my life.
I'm pleased too. Shall we sit down?
I've been very scared about Millicent. And now it's all right. Tell me all about her. Is she very pretty?
Sweetest girl on earth.
She really loves you?
If you saw her, you'd be still more surprised. I tell you solemnly, that girl is too good for me.
And you really do love her?
Madly. Devotedly. And when I think how I've deceived her, my soul sickens.
Have you deceived her?
Not yet, but I'm going to in about 5 minutes. I booked a phone call to Blandings just now, and when it comes through, I shall tell her I'm speaking from my hotel bedroom, where I'm on the point of going to bed. You see, Millicent, though practically perfect in every other respect, is one of those girls who might misunderstand this little night out, did it but come to her ears. Speaking of which, you ought to see them, like alabaster shells.
I know what you mean. Ronnie's like that.
What, alabaster shells?
No, I mean, he would be furious if he knew that I'd come out dancing. Oh, no, I do love dancing so.
Excuse me, Mr. Carmody, sir?
Ah, this must be the bringer of glad tidings. Is that my call?
Yes, sir, your telephone call is all set. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. Amuse yourself somehow, Sue, till I return.
Good evening.
Hello?
Miss Brown?
Yes?
Yes, of course it is. I thought I'd take this opportunity. My name is Pilbeam.
Pilbeam? Oh, the one who sends the flowers.
That's right. I've wanted for a long time to meet you, Sue. I'm glad you got my flowers all right. Mind if I sit down? Thank you.
Well, I...
Oh, Sue. Thank God. There you are.
Ronnie, my precious, what are you doing here?
Sue, I just had to drive up from Blandings to see you. I called at your building, heard you were here with Carmody. That's okay, of course, but... who's this reptilian-looking squirt with his hair done in ridges? You're not Carmody?
No, I am...
Now, Ronnie...
Excuse me, sir.
Eh?
I'm afraid it's evening dress only on the dancing floor. Gentlemen in flannel suits can be accommodated in the balcony.
Shut up! Come on, you blister, tell me who you are.
Ronnie, please, he's just...
Look, I can explain.
Plenty of room in the balcony, sir. Evening dress only on the dancing floor, sir.
Didn't you hear me? I said stow it!
Ronnie! Mr. Ronald Fish, may I introduce Mr. Pilbeam?
What? Pilbeam? Pilbeam and the flower donny you said you didn't even know? Pilbeam hobnobbing in a restaurant? Right. Put your fists up, Pilbeam, you hobnobbing excrescence.
Now, wait a minute.
Sorry, sir, did my colleague mention that the management prefer to reserve the dancing floor exclusively for clients in evening dress?
Get out of my way.
But there's a bright side, sir. Gentlemen in flannel suits can be accommodated in the...
Take that, you interfering...
Accommodated in the balcony, sir.
And you? Now you, Pilbeam, you creeping, slinking Lothario.
Commissioner! Call the commissioner!
Pilbeam, put him up, you cuckoo in the nest.
All right, everybody. Stand back. Stand back there. I'll attend to this. Now, be a sensible gentleman, sir.
What? Take that, you mustachio waxwork! Oh!
Thank you, sir. This way, sir. I spent many lively years in the army before my present position. This is no trouble to me. This way, sir.
Let go of me. Take your hands off me. Let me go, do you hear?
Just a bouncing you out now, sir. Thank you. The police have been summoned. Thank you, sir. The street is this way. I'm obliged to you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Ronnie? Ronnie!
If you'll excuse me, Miss Brown, I have an urgent appointment.
I can't help feeling it's my fault, Sue. If I hadn't asked you to Mario's last night...
Oh, Hugo, I couldn't bear it this morning when Ronnie walked away from me without a word outside the magistrate's court. And now he's driven off to Blandings.
I'd better drink your tea.
It was finding me with Pilbeam, that's the trouble. You see, I told Ronnie, and it was quite true, that I didn't know him.
Yes, he said. Anyway, bound over to keep the peace, fined £5. Moral victory, I'd say. I tried to drive into his head that it was an accidental meeting with Pilbeam, but he'd have none of it. I fear, old thing, there's nothing to be done but leave the whole binge to Time the Great Healer.
I'm sure he'd see that I love him if we had a real talk.
The trouble is, you're here, and he'll be back at Blandings in a few hours. Complex.
Mr. Carmody. Mr. Carmody. Paging Mr. Carmody. Mr. Hugo Carmody.
Hang on, Sue. I say hi there.
Oh, Mr. Carmody. Wanted on the telephone, sir.
Oh, right. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Richard Little. Paging Mr. Richard Little.
Sue, I'm awfully sorry. It must be Millicent. She's the only person who knows I'm at this hotel. Cheer up. I'll be back in a minute.
Yes, of course. But, Hugo, I... Oh, I think I have an idea.
I say, that was Millicent on the phone.
Was it? How nice. Listen, Hugo...
Speaking from Blandings, she's broken off our ballet engagement.
Broken it off? But why?
She's found out that I took you to dinner last night.
What? But how?
If ever I meet that slimy Marcel Wave byproduct Pilbeam again, let him commend his soul to God, if he has time.
Oh, Hugo, tell me all about it.
Well, after I came up from Blandings, Millicent, suspecting I might be up to something in London, got the Argus agency on the telephone and told them to follow my movements. Apparently, she's just been talking to them and getting their report. And now she says that if I thought we were still engaged, I could have three more guesses. My every step was dogged by a blasted bloodhound.
I don't think Millicent can be a very nice girl.
Oh, no, she's an angel. Celebrated for it. I don't blame her.
I do. Now, listen, Hugo. While you were at the telephone, I had a marvellous idea. Have you ever heard of a Miss Schoonmaker?
I seem to know the name. Who is she?
Me.
Don't talk drip to a broken-hearted man. What do you mean?
Listen. When Ronnie was driving me in his car, we met Lady Constance. She thought I was this Miss Schoonmaker because, oh, you see, I shall wire Lady Constance that I'm coming to Blandings right away.
Game idea, Sue, but impasse. Absolutely out of the queue.
Why? She's expecting me.
Don't you realise that just as you reach the front door, the real Miss Schoonmaker will arrive in person, dishing the whole thing?
No, she won't, because Ronnie sent her a telegram in Lady Constance's name saying that there's scarlet fever or something at Blandings and that she wasn't to come.
Hang on. This is just coming through to me. It's terrific.
Don't you see, Hugo? Once I'm at Blandings, I shall be able to make Ronnie be sensible. Then you'll be able to tell Millicent that there was no harm in my being out with you because I'm engaged to Ronnie.
That's right. So go and send this Schoonmaker another telegram. Keep on sending telegrams. Say that Blandings Castle is ravaged with disease. Not merely scarlet fever, mumps. Not to mention housemaid's knee, diabetes, measles, shingles and the bots. We're on to a big thing, my Susan. Drink up. And tally-ho for Blandings!
Clarence, you look like something that's just been prepared for stuffing by a taxidermist.
Well, where's my pig?
I know. Bad business, this.
Appalling, my dear fellow. And what young Carmody tells me completely upsets my plans.
Carmody?
Yes. I sent him to the Argus Inquiry Agency in London to engage the services of a detective. Gregory Parslow once mentioned them to me in the days when we were on better terms.
Parslow?
Carmody tells me they were firm in their refusal to trace missing pigs.
Just as well.
What do you mean?
It'll save you a lot of unnecessary expense. I'd just been telling Constance the man who stole Empress of Blandings was Gregory Parslow.
What? Parslow?
It stands to reason. Have you forgotten what I told you the other day?
Yes.
About Parslow nobbling my dog, Towser?
Bless my soul. Your dog, I remember.
He nobbled Towser, and he's nobbled the Empress. Oh, dash it, Clarence, use your intelligence. Who else except Parslow had any interest in getting the Empress out of the way?
But Galahad, a man in Parslow's position. Fellow's a justice of the peace. He grows pumpkins, for goodness sake.
What do you mean, a man in his position? I've known young Parslow all his life.
Yeah, but even so...
And so don't expect me to believe that inheriting a baronetcy and settling down in the country has made him so dashed pure and high-minded that he wouldn't stoop to nobbling a pig.
The scoundrel. What shall I do?
Do? Go to him right away and tax him.
Huh? Tax him?
Look him squarely in the eye with his crime.
I will. Immediately.
I better come with you. Now then, Parslow. Your sins have found you out.
What? Threepwood? What the devil do you mean?
You see his face, Clarence?
I'm looking at it now.
Guilt written upon it.
Well, plainly.
Be very careful, Parslow. I may say, by way of a start, that we know all.
What do you mean? Emsworth, explain. What the deuce are you doing here? And what the devil is that old image talking about?
You know.
Parslow, produce that pig.
Pig?
Pig.
Did you say pig?
Pig.
What pig?
He says, what pig?
I heard him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Now look, Parslow, you sheep-faced, shambling exile from hell. Disgorge that pig immediately.
My Empress.
Precisely. Empress of Blandings, the pig you stole last night.
Do you mean to tell me that you seriously accuse... Emsworth, I always knew that you were as mad as a coot.
As a what?
coot sort of duck. Now listen, Parsler, we know you have stolen that pig.
I haven't stolen any damned pig. What would I want to steal a pig for?
What did you want to nobble my dog Towser for in the back room of the Black Footman? To queer the favourite. That's why you did it, and that's what you're after now. Oh, we can see through you, all right, young Parsler. We read you like a book.
You're crazy, both of you. Stark staring mad.
Parsler, will you or will you not cough up that pig?
I have not got your pig. I haven't seen the creature.
Why, a coot? Very well, Parsler. From now on, there will be no more forbearance. Unless you restore that pig, I shall insert in my book every dashed thing I can remember about you. The world shall know you for what you are, the only man who was ever thrown out of the Café de l'Europe for trying to raise the price of a bottle of champagne by raffling his trousers at the main bar. And what's more, I'll tell the full story of the prawns.
Ah, prawns.
I will. The full, true and complete story of the prawns, omitting nothing.
What was the story of the prawns, Medifa?
Never mind, Clarence. I know, and young Parslow knows. And if Empress of Blandings is not back in her sty this afternoon, you will find it in my book.
But I keep telling you I know nothing whatever about your pig. I have not seen the animal since last year's agricultural show. I didn't know it had disappeared till you told me.
Come along, Clarence.
What? Are we going?
Yes, there's nothing more we can do here. Let us get away from this house before it is struck by a thunderbolt.
Mr. Pilbeam, I have come to London to see you because I am in a position of serious difficulty.
Won't you sit down, Sir Gregory?
And because I remember with what discretion and resource you once acted on my behalf with regard to the recovery of some letters.
Indeed, Sir Gregory. There's any way in which I can assist you on this occasion? Perhaps you will tell me the facts from the beginning.
The beginning? Well, at one time, Pilbeam, I was younger than I am today.
Quite.
Poorer.
No doubt.
And less respectable. And during that period of my life, I unfortunately went about a good deal with a man named Threepwood.
Galahad Threepwood?
You know him?
I wrote an article about him once, when I was editing a paper called Society Spice. They tell me he called twice at the office with a horsewhip, wanting to see me.
Oh, you have met him then?
I have not. It is foreign to the editorial policy of Society Spice ever to meet visitors who call with horsewhips.
Would he have heard your name?
No, the names of the editorial staff were never divulged.
Ah, good. Threepwood cut up rough, did he? And yet he doesn't seem to mind writing things himself about other people, damn him.
Does he write? I didn't know.
He's writing his reminiscences at this very moment. He's down at Blanding's Castle, finishing them now. And the book's going to be full of stories about me. That's why I've come to see you. Dashed, infernal, damaging stories which will ruin my reputation in the county. There's one about some prawns.
Prawns? I see. But if these stories you speak of are libelous...
What has that got to do with it? They're true.
Well, the greater the truth, the greater the damages.
Look here, a jury could give me the heaviest damages on record, and it wouldn't do me a bit of good. What about my reputation? What about the Unionist Committee? I am on the point, Mr. Pilbeam, of being accepted as their candidate at the next election. And if that old pest's book is published, they will drop me like a hot coal. Now do you understand?
He is determined to publish this book.
It's the only object he's got in life, the miserable old fossil.
Well, in the circumstances, I really don't see what is to be done, except...
Get hold of the manuscript and destroy it, you were about to say. Exactly.
I beg your pardon? Steal the manuscript?
Only possible way.
Well, that's rather a tall order, isn't it, Sir Gregory?
Not for a clever young fellow like you.
How would I get into the place?
Look how you recovered those letters of mine. You told them you had come to inspect the gas meter.
I could scarcely go to Blanding's Castle and say I had come to inspect the gas meter and hope to be invited to make a long visit on the strength of it.
Hey?
You don't appear to realise, Sir Gregory, that the undertaking you suggest would not be a matter of a few minutes. I might have to remain in the house for a considerable time.
Why couldn't you go there as a butler or something?
Scarcely feasible, I'm afraid.
Well, it may interest you to know that to get that manuscript into my possession, I'm willing to pay £1,000.
A thousand?
A cheque for £1,000 the moment that old weasel's manuscript is in my hands.
Sir Gregory, I will take this case. You can rely on my being at Blandings Castle by tomorrow evening at the latest. As a matter of fact, I've already thought of a way of getting in there. I have a plan. Now, when you arrive home, I want you to invite Mr. Galahad Threatwood to dinner tomorrow night.
What? Ask the man to dinner? After what has occurred?
And as many others of the Blandings Castle party as you think fit, but Mr. Threepwood without fail. Once he is out of the castle, my path will be clear.
But... I think I catch your drift. Yes, Lady Constance. I'll send the invitation to her, and yes, dash it, I shall tell her the full facts. Women have a strange power over their near relations.
Splendid! Excellent, Sir Gregory. Then you can leave the rest to me.
Having reread the half-dozen pages which he'd written since luncheon, the Hon. Galahad Threatwood placed the manuscript in its drawer. Lovingly, like a young mother putting her firstborn to bed. He was ink-stained but cheerful. Happiness comes from giving pleasure to others. And the little anecdote which he'd just committed to paper would, he knew, give great pleasure to a considerable number of his fellow men. All over England they'd be rolling out of their seats when they read it. True, their enjoyment might possibly not be shared to its full extent by Sir Gregory Parslow of Matchingham Hall, for what the Hon. Galahad had just written was the story of the prawns. But the first lesson an author has to learn is that he cannot please everybody. Descending the broad staircase, he observed Beach in the hall below.
Hello, Beach. What's the car doing out there?
Oh, forgive me, sir. You made me jump.
The butler had a strained, haunted look, as if he'd done a murder and was afraid somebody was going to find the body. It was, in fact, the look that butlers always wear when they have allowed themselves to be persuaded, against their better judgment, into becoming accessories before the fact in the theft of their employer's pigs.
Her ladyship ordered the car, sir. I understand that she and Mr. Baxter are going to Market Blandings Station to meet the American young lady. Miss Schoonmaker, sir.
Schoonmaker? I used to know old Johnny Schoonmaker well. Makes the finest mint juleps in America. Seen Lord Emsworth anywhere?
His lordship's at the telephone, sir. Oh.
Beach, don't do that. You've got some kind of palsy.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Galahad. It was something I was suddenly reminded of. There was a gentleman who desired to communicate with you on the telephone. I understood him to say that he was speaking from Oxford, being on his way from London to Blackpool in his automobile.
Who was it?
Oh, I did not get the gentleman's name, sir. But he desired me to inform you that his business had to do with a dramatic entertainment.
A play?
Yes, sir. He said that he would call in to see you.
All right. Well, thank you, Beach.
Thank you, sir. Oh, good afternoon, Miss Millicent.
Oh, hello, Beach.
Ah, yes, I know who it is.
Oh?
He wrote to me yesterday. Theatrical manager fellow I used to go about with years ago. Man named Mason, owns the Regal Theatre. He's got a play, adapted from the French, and he's had the idea of getting me to put my name to it.
Really?
All on the strength of my book coming out at the same time. Not a bad notion, either. Galahad Threepwood's a name that's going to have box office value pretty soon.
Oh.
What's the matter with you? I've seen Fogg's the Bacteria. What's that you're reading?
It belongs to Aunt Constance. It seems to be about theosophy.
Theosophy? What the devil's happened to everyone in this house? There's some excuse, perhaps, for Clarence, if you admit the possibility of a sane man getting so attached to a beastly pig. But what's wrong with all the rest of you? Ronald's hiding in corners like a bereaved tomato, and Beach springs up and down when you speak to him like a harpooned whale. It's getting on my nerves. Good afternoon.
Hello, Millicent. I'm back. Interesting book?
I beg your pardon?
Only said, is that an interesting book?
Very.
What's it about?
Transmigration of souls.
Ah, the thing I'm not very well up on.
One of the many, I should imagine.
I say, don't go. You know, letting a little thing like what happened the other night at Mario's rot up a great love like ours, well, I call it a bit rotten. You know perfectly well you're the only girl in the world I ever...
Shall I tell you something, Hugo?
What?
You make me sick. And if you're interested in my future plans, I intend to marry the first man who comes along and asks me. Goodbye.
Bye. Beach.
Sir?
Curse all women.
Very good, sir.
Thank you.
Farewell, my boy.
Farewell.
No, not him as well. Now, I say, Beach, just remembered something. You were with old General Magnus, weren't you, before you came here?
Yes, Mr. Galahad.
Then perhaps you can tell me the exact facts about that trouble in 1912. Now, I know the old chap chased young Mandeville 3 times round the lawn in his pyjamas. But did he merely try to stab him with the bread knife, or did he actually get home?
I could not say, sir. He did not honour me with his confidence.
Infernal nuisance. I'd like to get these things right.
Oh, there you are, Galahad. I've had the most cheering piece of news.
Good God, Clarence, what's happened? Found that pig under the drawing-room sofa or something?
That detective, he has come after all. He's at the Emsworth Arms. He rang up to ask if I still required his services.
Well, you don't. There's only one man who could have stolen that pig, and that's young Parslow.
But this man will be able to collect evidence. It's most important. The case should be in the hands of a man with a trained mind.
Clarence!
Connie, my dear, a friend of mine is arriving this evening. Spent a few days. Forgot to tell you.
Well, we have plenty of room for him. I'm off to the station. By the way, we are dining at Matchingham tonight.
Oh, Matchingham? With whom?
Sir Gregory, of course.
What?
I had a note from him after luncheon. It is short notice, of course, but that doesn't matter in the country.
Constance, I will not dash it. Dine with that man. That is final.
Clarence.
Connie, no, please don't smile your lion tamer's smile.
Don't be absurd, Clarence. I have already accepted for you, Galahad, myself and Millicent. I do not intend to be on bad terms with our nearest neighbour, even if 100 of your pigmen leave you and go to him. If Sir Gregory has decided to make the first move towards a reconciliation, we cannot possibly refuse the overture.
Indeed, what about my friend, arriving this evening. I invite him here to pay us a visit. The moment he arrives, we meet him at the front door, dash it, and say, ah, here you are, Pilbeam. Well, amuse yourself, Pilbeam. We're off.
Did you say Pilbeam?
It's no use talking, Clarence. Dinner is at 8.
Once and for all, I tell you, Connie...
Of course we must go, Clarence.
What?
You're nothing gained by having unpleasantness with your neighbours in the country. We shall have a pleasant evening.
Exactly, Galahad. Now, I have to meet Miss Schoonmaker's train. Mr. Baxter is waiting for me in the car.
Yeah, but Galahad, look here, my dear fellow.
It's all right, Clarence, my boy. I have the situation well in hand.
Well, dine with Parslow? Why on earth the man is inviting us? I can't understand.
Well, I suppose he thinks that if he gives us dinner, I shall relent and omit the prawn story. No such luck. Do you know what we're going to do tonight, after dining with Parslow and sending Constance back in the car?
No.
We're going to steal his pig, my boy.
What?
Came to me in a flash while Constance was talking. Parslow stole the Empress. Very well. We'll steal Pride at Matchingham.
Steal? But Galahad...
The only thing to do. Reprisals. Recognised military manoeuvre.
Yes, but how?
Easily. You show me where he keeps it, my boy, and I'll do the rest. Then we'll be in a position to talk terms with young Parslow, and he'll see the game is up. And I'll tell you where we're going to hide the animal. We're going to put it in that caravan that your flowerpot-throwing friend Baxter arrived in. Nobody's going to think of looking there.
Bless my soul.
In the first of 2 parts of Summer Lightning by P.G. Woodhouse, Lisa Dillon played Sue Brown and Charles Dance played Galley, with Matthew Wolfe as Ronnie Fish. Beach was played by Tim Pickett-Smith, Lord Emsworth by Martin Jarvis, and Lady Constance by Patricia Hodge. Percy Pilbeam was played by Matt Lucas, Millicent by Rachel Sterling, and Hugo by Samuel West. Jared Harris was Rupert Baxter, and Michael Jaston played Sir Gregory Parslow. First waiter and commissionaire, John Glover. Second waiter and stage doorkeeper, David Weston. The page girl, Anna Moore. Ian Ogilvy was the voice of Woodhouse. Summer Lightning was dramatised by Archie Scottney, directed by Martin Jarvis, and is a Jarvis and Ayres production for BBC Radio 4.
So will peace and harmony ever be restored to Blandings? We'll find out tomorrow at the same time. Back in 2009, we broadcast a bite-sized episode of a radio drama and then left it to our listeners to tell us what should happen next. And you didn't let us down. 3 months later, you'd made a tale with more twists and turns than Spaghetti Junction, and possibly just as easy to get lost in. You can hear that story, which picked up a BBC Innovation Award and a Radio Academy Silver Award too, here on BBC Radio 4 Extra over 3 nights starting next Wednesday. That's October the 2nd. And following that, we're going to start all over again with a new story. That's Chain Gang. You can tune in, have a look at our website, and get set to steer us in the right direction.
The 2013 BBC Radio New Comedy Award. Meet the contestants for Heat 4.
Please, welcome to the stage, Glenmore!
My name is Glenmore. I live in London and I'm a newsreader.
I don't want to give the impression to anyone I've had a really bad upbringing up till now. It was quite nice. I had sort of very loving parents, my mum and my stepfather, or sort of a fake dad, or faux pa.
I would like to win the award because then it would allow me to never work again. Not in a financial level at all, but would allow me to sort of sit back at home and people would say, Glenn, why don't you have a job? And I'd just sort of point at the award and say, well, that. And be living in real sort of extreme levels of poverty as a result. But at the same time, I'd be happy. That's the main thing.
Please welcome to the stage Malcolm Head.
My name's Jack Stratton. My stage name, Malcolm Head. I am a comedian and writer, and I live in London.
In the past, traditionally, I'm not very quick-witted, so what I've done when someone's heckled me is just taken their email address. Buys you a bit of time.
I live in a small flat in London with both sets of grandparents, uncles, cousins, like 30 members of my family, none of them work. And everyone's kind of invested, you know, a lot of time and money into me entering this competition. A lot of pressure on me to win. So I don't deserve to win, but I need to win, which I think is more important.
Welcome to the stage, Lauren Patterson.
Hey, so I'm Lauren Patterson. I'm 19. I'm a student from Newcastle.
And I kid you not, the most valuable thing I've learned in 1 year of living away from my house at university is that cheese is ridiculously expensive.
I entered the award really just for a little bit of experience. I didn't expect anything to come of it, so it was a nice little surprise when I got through.
Please welcome to the stage, Johnny Pelham.
My name is Jonathan Pelham. I'm from Bradford, and I'm currently a student at Newcastle University. I was born with webbed toes, webbing behind the back of my legs, a cleft palate, a cleft lip, a hole in the roof of my mouth. And depending on how you define the nipple, I possess either 3, 4, or 5. If I want it to be great because I'm moving to Manchester, it'd be nice to have something to stand out a bit, to get to carry the trophy around to all the gigs and such like.
Please welcome to the stage, Manchester, Daniel Nicholas.
I'm Dan Nicholas, and I'm from Leicester. I work in retail.
I knocked a cow over and cried for hours over what I potentially spilt.
Winning the award would be groovy. It could change my life, I don't know. Perhaps it asks me if I win.
The 2013 BBC Radio New Comedy Award continues here on BBC Radio 4 Extra. In Friday night's Comedy Club at 10:30.
Well, Mel's here next. I'll see you at 5 with plastic balls and sewing machines. That, for the moment, is all I can tell you.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Oh, good afternoon. It's 4 o'clock. I'm Mel Gedroych, here with today's 4 o'clock show, and a slightly weak impression of Leslie Phillips, just to kick things off with. Now, this week on the programme, we're listening to the classic tale Tom's Midnight Garden by Philippa Pierce. It's all about young Tom, who's been sent to stay with his aunt, and the strange things that happen there when the clock strikes 13.
He'd come down the stairs and along the hall to the garden door at midnight, but when he opened that door and stepped out into the garden, the time was much later.
Oh, brilliant stuff. The next chapter coming your way at the end of the show. Also on the cards for this afternoon, a certain Mr. Fred McCauley will be here with two teams pitting their wits against each other to be crowned champions in today's edition of our 4 o'clock show quiz. Keep it in the family. And you know it. Yeah, you know it. We'll go off exploring on our magical mystery tour. Now, as always, the destination of today's tour will remain top secret, highly classified information, until the second half of the programme. Until then, a mere scatterage of clues will be thrown your way in the hope that you might figure out where we're off to. I do hope so. So, clue numero uno. Today, we're off to an area with lots of puddles. Some of them very deep. Have a think. In this week's story, Tom's Midnight Garden, strange things happen when the old grandfather clock in his aunt's house strikes 13. On yesterday's programme, presenter Lars Tharp, accompanied by Simon Ball and Viscount Alan Middleton from the British Horological Institute, explored the history of the grandfather clock and unravelled the importance of those early timekeepers. Well, it's back to Lars now. Is there life on Lars? There certainly is, as he follows the journey of these grand clocks into our homes and our lives. Sorry, Lars.
The borrowers lived under the grandfather clock, secure in the knowledge that once in place, the clock would be there forever.
Under this passage, in the hall below, there was a clock, and through the night he would hear it strike the hours. It was a grandfather clock and very old. Mr. Frith of Leighton Buzzard came each month to wind it, as his father had come before him and his great-uncle before that. For 80 years, they said, and to Mr. Frith's certain knowledge, it had not...